Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you. Boom, I'm in the room. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Everyday Conversations Regarding Mental Health. They're your ear because there's nothing on the telly. And I'm coming to you live from the old Hill Manor. Now, this evening I've got a guest on. I will tell you now that it's a pre-recorded one. But you will be able to comment because it's up as a premiere. So this evening, you know what the show's about. It's all about mental health, mental well-being, taking the stigma out of it. Now, this evening I'm going to talk with my guest about disability and living with a disability and how it affects their mental health. So without too much further ado, I'm going to bring my guest in. So Tracy, good evening or good afternoon. Good morning for you.
Hello, Tim. Thanks so much for having me. How are you?
I'm good. I say good, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. Underneath this gorgeous exterior, there's an absolute train wreck going on. But we're not here to talk about me. We're all here to talk about you. So I understand that you've got a little bit of a disability. And that affects your mental well-being. So I'm going to give you the platform if you want to have an enlighten us about how that is for you. So the floor is yours.
Oh, well, thank you so much. First, you know, just welcome. Thank you for permitting me this opportunity. My name is Tracy Garner, and I do live my life from a wheelchair. I use a wheelchair sometimes 16 hours a day getting around, and I've done that since I was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy, more specifically spinal muscular atrophy. I was diagnosed with that at the age of 2. And I got my first wheelchair when I was in elementary school, around about 5 years old. And I just have always dealt with that. I walked until I was about 10 years old with crutches and holding on to the wall and just kind of using things to hold on to keep myself upright. But then muscular dystrophy is something that makes your muscles weaker over time, and it slowly progresses. And so it did progress to me having to use a wheelchair full time, not being able to lift over a certain amount of pounds. But I've, you know, learned to deal with it. And in today's, you know, topic about mental health, sometimes when you're born with a disability and you just seem to naturally be able to adapt to it, it doesn't mean that you won't need some kind of mental health counseling, you know, throughout your life. While it's a daily thing that I've had while I was diagnosed, and I always had it from birth, and it started manifesting itself around age 2, you know, sometimes we don't talk to people with disabilities about mental health and about getting counseling because we think, wow, you've got something that you've been dealing with for such a long time. I'm in my mid-40s now, and it's like, oh, you should be used to that, you know? But just like grieving any other thing, just like death and dying and losing loved ones, it's really something that you carry with you. And you never quite, you know, quote unquote, get over it. It is a constant daily battle of something to just kind of deal with. You know, it's like a little monkey on your back and you just can't get off. And yes, of course, there are lots of advocates and people that don't want to. They've come to embrace their disability. And while I have embraced it, I kind of don't have a choice. It doesn't mean there is some issues that go along with that and dealing with the everyday and also the attitudinal barriers that go along with that. All of that is something to consider, something to talk about with a professional, and something for you to learn different mechanisms to cope with it. And sometimes you have to step outside of yourself, get help, and have people that have different perspectives and offer you new ideas on dealing with your whatever it is. Everybody has something.
Wow. So from an early age, you've been struggling with this this disability. I mean, must have I can't even say it.
It's okay. Condition, illness.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, just from an everyday perspective of just being able to move around.
Yes, to move around.
Must be a challenge in itself.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And getting exercise and, you know, it's not even that it's the disability is so hard. It's often how society responds to it. You know,
yeah.
A lot of society, a lot of doctors, a lot of professionals will encourage you not to work, just to sit home and collect a government check, to say, you know, the places that you visit are inaccessible. You're still inside a regular person, you know, but you have to find ways to get into spaces to, you know, we have the Americans with Disabilities Act here in the United States, but there are still many places that have not, you know, rolled out the welcome mat to people with disabilities. And that is constantly evolving. But it shouldn't be so hard. It shouldn't be so hard for one to live their life. And accessibility, you know, I always use this example, but, you know, if everybody didn't need it, why is the disabled bathroom with a little bit of extra room always full? And the actual person with a disability can't get in there. So the things that we're making accessible, everybody is consuming. And we just don't think about that. The ramps are used for women with children in strollers. The automatic doors are used for people who deliver things and anybody who's carrying a package and doesn't have the hand available to open it. So it's not that the disability, it's not that I'm suffering. It's that I am waiting for the rest of the world to rise up and to be more accommodating. So I never feel like I've been struggling. I feel like I do have an internal struggle just to always accept myself, but also to handle the disappointments that come along when I go to a museum. I really wanted to go to it. I read about it online. Nobody ever told me that there was like 10 steps and it was not, you know, accessible to wheelchairs, or the accessibility interest is around the back, you know, like we used to do in segregation. Like all of these things that occur in your daily life make you feel some type of way. It makes you feel like you're not wanted. You're not welcome here. We don't have any accommodations for you. And then the attitudinal barriers is just a whole different thing. Not only is the building not accessible, but then the attitudes of builders and people and things that make the buildings say that, oh, you know, it's so much cheaper to do it right the first time than to tear it apart and redo it. And it would just be open so many doors for a lot of people.
I know here in the UK, there are building regulations that stipulate any new building has to be accommodated for disabled. Mm-hmm. They have to have ramps. Yeah, they have to have lifts. They have to widen doors. Mm-hmm. Doors have to be a certain width for access. And that goes, and any public buildings have to, whether they're old buildings or new buildings, they have to have in place the accessibility for people with disabilities for wheelchairs.
We have that too. Yeah, it's just that who can go around policing all of these people when they don't do it? Because there's still that, you know.
The local authorities have the power to be able to go and enforce it. So it sometimes comes down to the actual local authority not doing the job, and that is a problem, and that can be a problem for lots of people. Where local politicians, local councillors, and that are just in it for themselves, and don't understand what they're getting themselves into when they get elected. They don't understand the full implications of being somebody in that authority. So
and
what people should do is, if they do see these places that haven't abided by the laws, by the building regulations, She reports it to the local authorities, and if they don't do anything about mm-hmm. it, then push it up the chain to the we have members of parliament that we can push it to, and I guess you mm-hmm. have members of Congress that will pick up on cases. So you can
we escalate do. It. We- Mm-hmm. And there is so much advocacy that goes on. I guess my point is that it just shouldn't have to be, you know, it just really should be implemented from the get-go. And, you know, I'm able to access a lot. You know, I live in near the nation's capital in the United States, near outside of DC. So I would say that there is a lot of advocacy here, and I do have access to a lot of things. But I also know that there are places in you know, in and around the United States and other countries where access is just so, you know, not there. It's not available at all. People can't even leave their homes. They don't have wheelchairs. You know, they don't have caregivers. And also some people are not being educated simply because of access issues. So while I'm not complaining so much about where I live in a wonderful place that's majority is accessible, but it should be a worldwide thing. And you know, you would think as the years progress, it would become more prevalent that people wouldn't have to struggle so much. But in mentioning all that, that is why the mental health aspect is so important, because it's such a foundation for everything else, to be able to live your life, to be able to articulate, you know, what you need, to you know, be able to be outgoing and enjoy things outside. But disability is such a personal struggle. Nobody can really take it from you and carry it for you for a few days. You don't get an off day from it. And so that's why talking with someone and not being afraid to do that is so important.
I mean, that would be so good if you could pass it off onto somebody else for a couple of days.
Yeah, just for a little vacation. I'll take it back.
Yeah.
No, but just a little
vacation,
a little siesta.
There's times I'd love somebody to take over my tinnitus just for 5 minutes.
Yes,
I mean, my
yes.
tinnitus is exceptionally bad at the moment, and it is having a bit of an effect. Coupled that with the rheumatoid arthritis, some days I struggle just to get them out of bed, having had a really lousy night's sleep because of the noise of the tinnitus in my head.
It can really mess with your psyche and your motivation. You know, you just have no motivation because all your energy is concentrated on this one pain point. And that's the same with disability and anything anybody's carrying. It's really, they're all things to contend with every single day.
Absolutely. I think it's important that, I'm not sure it will go worldwide because they're the third world countries, let's face it, they don't really have the resource to do an awful lot. But certainly the first world, there's no reason why first world countries cannot accommodate and accept that people are living with disabilities and to give them the access to particularly public services that they deserve. So I just want to go back and pick up on that point about that museum that you wanted to go and visit. Surely they must have been breaking some of the rules for not having access. I mean, 10 steps going up in a wheelchair is not a lot of fun. It's probably even worse coming down than going up.
Well, it's a liability going up or down. So that's the other problem, is that while there are so many wonderful people willing to help you, they really shouldn't, because you could get hurt. They could get hurt. You know, everybody could be sued, you know, and they can sue you too. Like, why would you even let us carry you up these steps? Like, who's making the decisions here? You know? And so that does happen. That does, those things still happen.
And all they needed to do was put in like a stair lift. That you can park your wheelchair on and just go up the 10 steps.
Yeah, and back to your third world country thing. I think it really, even they have some ways. I understand about resources. They don't have materials. But just opening their minds and thinking outside the box, you know, is also really important. Sure, you can't do everything. Not everything can be made accessible. But at least to, you know, just ensure people have access to education, whether that's through home visits, moving classrooms. You know, when I was in high school, there were some classes up on the second level, you know, so they didn't just say, oh, you couldn't go to those classes because they were on a second level. They moved those classes down to the first level for the ones that I had to go to. Like, this is not a hard thing to think about. You know, we're just not used to it. And we think everything requires so much, you know, red tape and bureaucracy when it's a simple idea to just move it. And so there's always a way around.
Yeah, but unfortunately, common sense isn't given to everybody.
Yes.
It just needs a bit of common sense more often than not.
Yes, that's so
true. To be able to look at this. But having said, I mean, the third world, I've worked in some real third world countries and seen people with disabilities and just to see the way that how resilient that they are able to cope with their problems and able to get around.
Right.
I mean, particularly in somewhere like Afghanistan, where you see lots of people that have lost limbs.
Yes.
And how they manage, and not an awful lot put in place for them per se, but they find ways around it. I mean, Afghans tend to be very resilient, tough people.
Yes, yes, and so in Africa too. I mean, they make wheelchairs out of just even the trash. You know, an old tire that you think is, you know, of no use, some metal and some different parts. Just to be able to make something for people to, an old bicycle seat can become a wheelchair seat, you know, and you put there's just so many different ways. Just using the materials that people have laying around that looks like trash, but can actually be recycled into something. I mean, recycling bottles into purses and bags and different things. Yeah. So there's no reason that some of that can't translate into every country.
I mean, the third world are pretty industrious when it comes to recycling stuff and making stuff work out of nothing.
right. They have to be.
I've always been amazed when particularly when I was going around in Afghanistan to seeing what these people are capable of doing. And also places like Morocco or Egypt.
Yes.
And just seeing how people are able to make something out of nothing.
So true.
But the first world countries discard stuff that
all the time
could so easily be sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
Something
mm-hmm.
else that happens, I don't know whether it happens in America, but it certainly happens here. If you say you break a leg, you go to the hospital, they fix your leg, they give you a set of crutches to get around on. When your leg's fixed, you can't get the crutches back.
It's crazy.
They don't recycle them.
Mm-hmm.
They'd sooner you throw them in the bin.
Yeah, and it ends up in a landfill or in the ocean. Yeah. It's our medical disposal, medical durable medical equipment. Actually, at the agency where I am currently working, we do take some materials. But then there are some that just have a negative connotation, like commodes and things that may have human pathogens. I understand that. But surely those parts, especially the metal part where you sit on, can be taken apart and used for something else. But I agree. We have a serious... And then most people can't afford those things. You know, if they are poor or uninsured, then they don't have that. Luckily, we do have quite a few number of reuse, recycle programs where we are sometimes refurbishing the equipment and giving it back out to people. But you're right. They don't want anything used. You could have used it for 6 weeks and it's still a pair of crutches is just something that you can just wipe down with alcohol swabs and it would be totally usable.
I mean, put them through a steam cleaner.
Yeah, jump walkers down. And like I said, commodes, wheelchairs, even Hoyer lifts, which are used to lift people up and transport them to the bed or the chair, all of these things. It's really unfortunate that we are in such a throwaway society, but you're right. We could be using those things. We could refurbish them and then pass them back out to people that need them. And that is happening. I will say that. That is happening in some different parts of different organizations.
Yeah, I mean, our National Health Service over here, they waste so much money. It's unbelievable. If you go to A&E, for instance, and they prescribe you something like a couple of paracetamol, they'll get a new packet, take out two, give you them, and they have to throw the rest of the packet away.
Yeah.
That is just waste.
It really is.
And the other thing is, because it's sold to the NHS, they pay about 10 times what you would pay in a pharmacy for.
It is sad. It's depressing because so many people, even the medication, even the antibiotics that you may have taken, those seems like they could be used somehow, especially for people in clinics, people that don't have any insurance, people at the different, especially like immigration and, you house a bunch of people, they're all there together. There are so many communicable diseases and things. Surely they could use that to cut down on just the spread of different things and to heal people, forget the spread, but to heal people of whatever they have. If you are taking it, surely it's good enough for someone else to take and can be looked at by a doctor and a pharmacist. They could look at it all and make sure that it's all okay. So so I agree. It's unfortunate.
It's like when they give you a prescription and you don't use all the prescription because it's fixture, you're stuck with half a packet of pills you can't dispose of.
Right.
and they won't recycle them.
And you have to be careful about them ending up in the wrong people's hands because of drug addiction and other addictions that people have. Some people search through your trash can looking for pills. Before Matthew Perry died, the friend star in his book, which I didn't read, but I watched all the interviews, he would just go to different houses, like a house tour of an open house, and go up to their medicine cabinet and look for their medication. And I just thought, oh my gosh, how much medication do people have just lying around? And you would never think that an addict would go up there, but we have no idea. We have no idea the lengths people would go to get those drugs. So here in the US though, you can take your old drugs to the police. So that is one good thing. And they will either dispose of it. There's also a kit you can buy that you mix the medication with and it turns into a solid. So then you can dispose of it. But here again, those things end up in our water supply. We drink it back up, and we wonder why we're all sick is because the streams and the water that we get is full of, all kinds of medications. So that's unfortunate, but even if it's turned into a solid, it still could melt and become soluble again. So I'm not sure how great an idea that is, but it is a temporary fix for a much larger problem.
So coming back to how your disability affects your mental well-being, how do you deal with that on a sort of daily basis? Do you go and talk to somebody about it? Just get on with it?
I do mostly get on with it, but I have a number of tools that, I've gotten from talking to different counselors. I have my faith, which is probably the number one tool. Prayer is a tool. Journaling is also a tool. Really thinking about a list of things that make you happy. Affirmations are also a tool. Just reading something daily. Even saying to yourself, I'm worthy of different experiences. I'm worthy to have a life like other people. Because disability is a very interesting and complex confidence killer. When you're rolling around in a wheelchair, you're looking at people from their midsection, sometimes you miss that eye-to-eye contact, and that can make your self-worth go down. So I would say that it's mostly around self-worth, about feeling good about yourself. You know, I have to rely on caregivers that come in every day in the morning and night to help me. And sometimes I got to deal with a lot of different personalities. They're not always the most upbeat. They have their own problems. And sometimes they bring those problems to work. And sometimes I counsel them. And then some days I'm like, I have to counsel myself. I can't counsel you too. You know, so you have to think about your energy. You have to think about your energy that you give to people. And just working with people, you know, on a daily basis who also have their own wounds. And you have to give them grace because they have their own wounds too. And so that's a lot sometimes to carry. You know, I was even telling someone, like my mom, who's kind of like a backup caregiver for me, because I have people that come in and I don't want to tax her. She's aging too. But just to think about, you know, when I have a falling out with one of my caregivers, you know, she's like, well, you don't need her. You know, let's get on with it. We'll do it ourselves. And I'm thinking like, no, I do need her because, you know, this is the work that I've hired her to do. We're going to have falling outs sometimes. We're not going to get along, but we have to be able to come back together and say, you know, I need you to help me. You need a job. You need income. So we're going to have to put aside our differences and try to work together. That's hard to deal with, especially have to go to sleep on having a fight with someone who's supposed to help you. You know, that happened just the other day. I was like, I got to go to sleep. I can't think about this. They were having their own bad day. I can't absorb that. You know, I need to go to sleep. I have a meetings tomorrow. I have to be at my best and I have to perform, you know, and just carrying some of those things. You really have to kind of talk to yourself to let it go. So those are just some of the tools. And my professional counselor, someone who, not your parent, not your spouse. There's nothing wrong with talking to these people. They're close to you. They love you. But sometimes they lack objectivity in order to give you some good ideas. And a professional counselor is unbiased. You know, they can really look outside of the situation. They're not in it with you. And so then they can give you some real help. And sometimes you can't think of good things to help you when you're stressed, when you're feeling low, when you have a crying fit. There's no possible way for you to come up with good ideas when you are currently injured. And so I think people need to remember. And plus, you shouldn't want to burden your family members with things for them to feel bad and them to take it on when they really can't do anything with it. They can be with you. They can comfort you. But as far as solutions go, it's hard for them to find some too.
Absolutely. Well, that's that's really interesting. And and for anybody listening out there that is living with a disability, I think they can recognize some of the issues that we've talked about.
For sure.
And I think everybody has a little problem with their mental health occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's exacerbated by some of the other problems that we suffer.
Right.
So I think that's important that we look at all aspects and respect other people, particularly people that are struggling, that are living with a disability. Mm-hmm. And it's not always the disability that you can see is the problem.
Right.
And I think that's, so you can see people with broken legs and stuff like that, but you can't see people that are suffering inwardly from a mental well-being perspective.
Yes. That's so true, Tim.
Mm.
You never know. And all of us have something. I really believe that. Well, I believe that, you know, sometimes people don't want to admit their issue. Like you said, you can't always see it, but there is something sometimes internally that people are dealing with. And so I don't want to make it seem like people who have outward visible disabilities, you know, have something more over than someone else. But it's important even more to just give everybody grace, no matter what you can or cannot see, because there may be something that they're dealing with. And that's okay. They're going to deal with it. But, you know, just to be good humans toward one another would be the ultimate gist of all of this, because you don't know what people are going through, and because people don't wear a sign that says, I'm going through something, you know, be nice to me. We should just do that as a courtesy anyway.
No, I have a way of living, and that's I treat everybody as I'd like to be treated myself. And you do that, you're not going to go far wrong in life. So respect everybody.
And that's right.
You should get that respect back.
Yeah.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. It's great talking to you.
And to you. Well, I think that's a really good eye-opening discussion that we've had about disability and living with it and the effects that it can have on your mental well-being. So until the next one, I thank you. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel if you haven't already done so. Give us a thumbs up and join in the conversation. Put in a comment. Let us know what you think. So until the next one, TTFN. Ta-ta for now. Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you.